Reform Initiative Podcast. Podcast مبادرة الإصلاح العربي.
Hello, I am Malik Lakhal and you're listening to على الميدان. على الميدان is part of جلسة, Arab Reforms Initiative Podcast. The Arab Reform Initiative, or ARI, is an independent Arab think tank working with expert partners in the Middle East and North Africa to articulate a homegrown agenda for democratic change. We conduct research and policy analysis and provide a platform for inspirational voices based on the principles of diversity, impartiality, gender equality, and social justice. I work as a research fellow at ARI, and I'm based in Tunis. In على الميدان, I will be interviewing researchers, journalists, and art practitioners about their experience with fieldwork. In this episode of على الميدان, I interviewed Youssef Shazli. Youssef is a political scientist. He was just appointed assistant professor in Paris 8 University in Saint-Denis. He is part of the ERC Dream team, a research project on the archives of revolutions in the Arab Mediterranean. The team recently published a book called L'Esprit de la Révolte, Archive et Actualité des Révolutions Arabes, The Spirit of Revolt, Archive and Actuality of the Arab Revolutions, a catalogue of the last 10 years of Arab revolutions. His PhD thesis studied the reasons behind political mobilizations in Alexandria, Egypt, during the 2011 revolution. His fieldwork in both Cairo and Alexandria made him meet many Egyptian activists. So, hello, Youssef. Thank you for accepting على الميدان's invitation. So, if you could introduce yourself first.
Sure. So, my name is Youssef Shazli. I'm currently just starting teaching sociology of the Arab world at the University of Paris 8, Vincennes Saint-Denis. I am from Egypt, Alexandria. Did my PhD in political science and sociology, kind of in a mixed program on the It was a kind of a monograph of the Egyptian Revolution from the purview of Alexandrian participants.
So first of all, could you tell us what your fieldwork was about? Who did you talk to and why?
Sure, it's a big question. it's kind of, actually a lot of the research I did kind of evolved from my presence on the fieldwork, which was kind of central to the way I developed the work that became my dissertation. So initially I was not working on that topic when I started my PhD. I was working on pro-Palestinian protests in Egypt. But that kind of, I started that research just before the revolutions happened, and kind of found myself in the midst of the revolutionary event, which made it very hard to kind of talk to people about what had happened 10 years prior, right, during the Intifada, while for the first time, you know, big political transformations were going on. So initially I started on that topic, and in one of my field visits in Egypt, I was back home in Alexandria and kind of realized that a lot of the things that were happening in the streets were interesting and were there was very little written on it, partly because a lot of the political science literature on Egyptian politics is really a literature on Cairo, if not on downtown Cairo. And I actually had participated in that myself, since I had been studying Cairo while being in Alexandria myself. So I kind of ended up wanting, I started really from that very broad point that I wanted to know what was going on politically in Alexandria in 2011 and the next year. So that was kind of that broad beginning. And it started by me kind of trying to participate to as much as I could to events that were going on. So I started by talking to activists who were organizing. So from the different political organizations that were active in Alexandria, there were a bunch of them. Some of them were specific to Alexandria. The Revolutionary Socialists are a national organization, but there were other groups like Lesim, which were more kind of a liberal orientation. You had several small groups that kind of were only in Alexandria, in a sense. And also with union activists, I talked a lot with the doctors syndicate, members of the doctors syndicate, with people who were in the cultural and artistic scene. So I started going to a lot of things and talking to a lot of people just to kind of get a sense of what was going on. And also because of that lack of literature on Alexandria, I was kind of doing everything from scratch. You know, I didn't have a literature I could base myself on, so I needed to do a lot of legwork myself. So yeah, initially this is how it started, is talking to people in the kind of activist scene, people in the cultural and artistic milieu, people in the unions, with the idea, the why being, I want to understand what is going on. I do not want to have that, you know, big idea about the revolution. I want to see how people are dealing with it on a day-to-day basis and kind of engaging their bodies and souls into an event that they don't know if it will work out or not. That was kind of the starting point of all that.
I know that you edited the issue specifically on Alexandria because, as you just mentioned, there's a lack of work that has been done on Alexandria because of some sort of a Cairocentrism. And you also, I read the introduction and you mentioned how Alexandria is kind of, I don't know how to put it, but like not just orientalized, but kind of romanticized and mythologized. And how did the work you did in Alexandria try to actually actively put these ideas away?
Yeah, so yeah, we did. I was lucky enough to be given the opportunity by the Egypte Monde Arabe Journal, which is a journal of the Sedej in Cairo. I had like a carte blanche to do whatever I wanted to kind of create that. And the idea was really simple, honestly, which it kind of should be the starting point of any social scientist, in a sense, is that I remember that when I started to do my literature review for my dissertation, I just wanted to have some information about Alexandria, right? I just wanted to have some data, which is where we should start usually. And I couldn't find anything. And I remember at some point I was a visiting scholar at Columbia University, and they have this amazing library. And I would go through all these books on Alexandria that all had in common that they kind of ended in, you know, 1956, and as if nothing happened after that. And I quote a French historian in the beginning of my the essay in the introduction that was kind of a very shocking thing to read, where she was saying, you know, if you want to see Alexandria, you need to either read the novels that wrote about it or just look at the sea. And basically the message was just do not look at the people who are in Alexandria. So the beginning of all that was just how can we first of all recover some of the history and of the contemporary aspects of Alexandrian life. You had some authors. The late Semir Suleiman had written a very interesting kind of economic take on the transformation of Alexandria in the 90s. And French geographer Éric Denis had a text also, but that was already 20 years old. So the idea was really to kind of gather all these people who did field work and who had in common that, yeah, the empirical aspect was at the center of what they were doing, that they were doing actual research with people, and that they were moving away from that, you know, yeah, mythical image of Alexandria, the cosmopolitan Alexandria, and all of that. So what I tried to do in my research in the dissertation was just I ended up having to do a lot of that legwork of context, of just trying to finding as much as I could in, you know, sometimes in novels, sometimes in newspapers. I did a lot of work on newspaper archives to just kind of recover just, you know, positive data, objective between, like, you know, just data, just raw data on Alexandria, so that when we're talking about contemporary Alexandria, we are talking about something that relates to social reality and not just the images or what we miss or what we would like to see and so on. For me, I mean, I don't think that these discourses are useless, but just that as social scientists, the basis is should be that, you know, we're doing fieldwork, we're doing research, and we're producing data that other people might be able to use or not. So a big part of, although the dissertation is really about kind of revolutionary emergence and development of, you know, a revolutionary movement, almost half of the book, the first half of the book, is really kind of setting the scene and trying to, you know, give us information about the economic transformation, demographic transformation, the emergence of, I don't know, malls in Alexandria in the 90s and the 2000s, the emergence of cultural spaces for the youth, and all that. And I mean, I'm lucky to have now a lot of colleagues who are doing great work in that sense, like Samuli Schilke, an anthropologist, has been doing great work. Alexandra Schindler, who just finished her PhD on Alexandria, also doing great empirical work. So it is changing now also that we have you know, new people who have been there and who are writing about it.
So now I'm sorry, we're going to go back to Cairo. That was, but we'll go back to
Cairo. We always have to.
Yeah. So you were in Tahrir partially during the January 25th revolution. Right. How did you consider your positionality? Were you a citizen participating in a life-altering event or a researcher in political sociology studying the making of a mass movement?
So it's always kind of somewhere in the middle, right? So I arrived in Egypt on January 29th. So the day after kind of the big break of the police and, the arrival of the army, and kind of when the situation switched from protest to kind of a revolutionary situation. And obviously it is such an event is such a shocking thing to witness, to feel, to observe in all aspects, really, even in how the streets look and how people are interacting, that it's hard to just, you know, take a step back and be, at least for if you're from that country, you know, you can't just, especially if you went into studying political sciences and sociology because you had an interest in, you know, the politics of your country, it's very complicated to just, you know, have that posture of being, you know, I'm just trying to understand, I'm just trying to observe. So in the beginning, it was really kind of going through it and trying to make sense. And this is why I was saying earlier that also a part of the idea of the project was trying to understand how people moved through that event, because as someone who lived through it, I really knew that it wasn't that easy to comprehend. It's not that, it wasn't something that was obvious. None of it was obvious. And depending on where I was and who I was talking to on a daily basis, kind of my views and my opinions were changing very quickly on what was going on. And I thought that if someone like me who, you know, had a master's in political science, who was studying these questions, who had kind of a political opinions that were quite clear, I thought, was changing opinions that quickly, then, you know, I should take seriously that these events are not that easy to understand. But the other kind of funny thing that I remember is, I remember being on Tahrir Square in the early days of February, when, you know, kind of the situation was we didn't really know where we were going, and people would ask me, I remember that quite vividly, that people were like, okay, so you're doing a PhD in political science, you know, like, let us know what are we supposed to do now. And I was like, I have no clue. I have literally no clue of what we're supposed to do at this point. So I'm just trying to, you know, understand, see. And then I think this also kind of explains a lot how maybe I approach the topic and write about it, is that I'm not that much concerned. Obviously, I'm in a discipline, in a academic discipline. I need to talk to my peers. I need to, you know, discuss all, you know, the theories that are going on. But I've always felt that the main thing I'm trying to do is kind of to, you know, keep a trace of what happened and how people went through it and lived it. And it's something that also led me to participate in the project, the Dream, ERC Dream headed by Leila Dakhli, where we kind of, I think we all you know, share that idea that we want to keep a trace and keep a memory of what happened and how people lived through it, especially in moments where you see the erasure of kind of the memory of that event. So this has always been a central thing, and it is in the book and in the projects I've been doing since. It's just not necessarily, and I think this is where the kind of citizen political participation and the academic join forces, is that the academic project I'm doing is also, or I'm trying to do at least, is a project that kind of puts the individuals in at the center of the project, and their voices are more important for me than, you know, contributing to a big debate that is going on, I don't know, in Western academia, at least in the US or in France or so on. So this is, I think, how the two, I find it that in Egypt and in other countries, it's very difficult to be, you know, a social scientist as you would be, you know, very professionally as they try to be sometimes in the US or elsewhere, because it's very difficult to disassociate the two, you know, like the political importance of doing, you know, social sciences and research and the actual politics, you know, the ongoing politics and struggles of the country. So I guess, yeah, the two are kind of intertwined.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you a question about what you just mentioned, because I noticed that your research insists very much on the micro level, on micro events that lead people to make their move to the street or to become activists. And it felt, well, for me, I mean, it's very, I see exactly where you're going with this, because you're trying to get away from anything that is approaching a grand narrative, or even worse, like a teleological narrative on how do people become this or that. But in the fieldwork, how did it come to play? Like, how did it make sense actually in the fieldwork?
So I think this is—it's really being very much embedded and you know, in constant conversation with the people in the field makes you more attuned, I think, to these dynamics. Because As someone who was teaching, you know, political science and sociology and reading a lot of the literature, having to review books and so on, it was always kind of shocking to see the discrepancy between what I was reading and what I was feeling literally on the field. It kind of did not speak to me. And I found myself more when reading, you know, social historians of the French Revolution or of different, you know, spaces, which usually showed the kind of how unclear these moments were and how nothing was obvious about them, and how, you know, it wasn't black and white and obvious to anyone what was going on. So this was kind of the first thing that led me to always be cautious. And then it's also the methods you use kind of, you know, determine a bit the discourse you're going to have, the narrative you're going to weave. The fact that I do ethnography, and that I spend a lot of time with a variety of people, and which is something I always try to do also, not just be, you know, with people who are similar to me, for instance, but kind of trying to navigate social spaces and political spaces that were very different. You see how people felt very differently about the same events or about, you know, certain events. So that was a big aspect. Obviously, the other one we talked about is the Cairo versus Alexandria, is that I saw that just going outside of Cairo kind of gave me a different feel of the revolutionary event. And then at some point, I also did a very short research, very short field work in Kafr Dawar, in the Delta, I mean, close to Alexandria, but outside from Alexandria, in a kind of in an industrial town, and saw that it was very different from Alexandria. And for me, it was important to kind of, yeah, have that different point of view, have that different perspective, and to have a better history of the event that happened. And I mean, I'm not inventing obviously any of that, because we have this, you know, social historians have done this, you know, in feminist theories, the importance of the personal and the importance of, you know, the biographies of people and the private life is also something that has, you know, irrigated the the research on that type of kind of qualitative micro research on revolution. So it was more important to me. I was more interested to see how people lived through it and reacted to it than, you know, the big narrative around it. And I think this is also what produced the research I did after the dissertation, which was on the biographical consequences of participation. You know, at this moment, we had the 10-year anniversary this year, I mean, in last January, and you had this moment where, you know, there's nothing remains. You know, it was a good topic. It was an interesting topic 10 years ago, but now it's like, yeah, it's the winter. It's, you know, there's nothing remaining. And I wasn't interested in looking at that discourse. I kind of was more into trying to understand how, you know, this had changed people, how participating in that event changed people in very different way, not necessarily in, you know, strictly in, I mean, it is political ways, but not in the, you know, the usual sense we give to politics. So this thing of looking at the micro was important. And yeah, it's, again, it's the field work that determines how you do things. It's because I had the chance of talking to amazing people in Alexandria that kind of, a lot of the good ideas, if not all the good ideas in the book are really, you know, things that I was told, and that I just tried to relay in a kind of the accurate and honest fashion. But it's usually, yeah, it comes from that, these discussions.
I wanted to ask you, how did you meet the persons you met? And would you have met them if not for the necessities of fieldwork?
That's an interesting question. I met a variety of people through different channels. I'd say that a part of them, I would have met them if I wasn't doing the field work, another bunch I wouldn't have because of, you know, social distribution of, you know, social classes and groups and so on. Before, I didn't know almost all of who became my interlocutors on the field. I didn't know them personally before doing the field work. So we didn't have any connections. When I started to do the field work, I kind of opened all the possible doors. So for instance, when I started to talk to people in the unions, especially in the doctor syndicate, I used, you know, connections I had of friends I had who had become doctors or family members, and so that was the introduction. In other cases, you know, 2011, 2012 was a time of great effervescence and fluidity, and it was just so easy to meet people. It was, you just go on Facebook and find the event where it was going, just go there and, you know, start talking to people, and that helped. The fact that, you know, most researchers are in Cairo and very few are in Alexandria made it also quite easy, because in Cairo people kind of, it's saturated and people are like, oh, another one. But in Alexandria, I was like the first probably to arrive and start talking to people. So there was a keen interest in, you know, welcoming me and giving me what I needed. Also because people could identify me, you know, sociologically. They knew who I was in Alexandria, you know, my family. They could make sense of who I was. So that helped a lot in the fieldwork. But yeah, I'd say that a lot of people in the cultural milieu or artistic milieu or people in kind of, I'd say, the left movement, I would have probably ended up meeting, you know, on my own, because these were spaces I already, you know, knew people in, people like childhood friends and so on who were already in these spaces. But in other groups, in other political groups and in other, you know, activist groups and etc., clearly some of the people that I ended up you know, being very close with and writing, you know, about their experience and so on would not have been people that I would have met in, because just, and this was also something that I ended up writing about in dissertation, because, you know, a lot of about the revolutionary experience is about sociabilities and spaces where people go to and, you know, socialize in and chat and spend time, and if you're not in these spaces, you're not gonna meet these people. But one of the great things about the revolutionary event was that it kind of brought very different spaces also together, and you ended up meeting people that you would have never met before, which was also my experience on Tahrir Square, that I ended up meeting people that I would probably never would have met because there is also always a differentiation of spaces. And, you know, Egypt is a big, very big country with a lot of people. So you end up, you know, being a lot in your milieus, in your initial milieus.
Yeah, in your kind of, I don't know, it can be class bubble or all sorts of bubbles, basically.
Yeah, of course.
So in a really beautiful article you wrote for Vacarme, you pay tribute to Mahidine Masri, a political activist in Alexandria.
Yeah.
Mahinour, sorry.
Yeah.
Whom you met and interacted with during your fieldwork. And you write about how meeting her unsettled your position as a researcher, along with your hypotheses and theories on mobilization. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, sure. It's a small text I wrote a couple of years back. So I actually met. I learned of Mahinour. I knew of her before really knowing her in a protest in January 2011, just before the revolution, actually, where I went for personal reasons and she got arrested that day. So I learned of who she was on that day because she was arrested for a couple. She didn't spend long, but she was arrested on that day. What was interesting, I mean, the discussion was. And yeah, it's kind of odd because she's a friend, so it's odd to speak in that, you know, academic kind of how she changed the perspective I had. But she kind of unsettled an important way I was looking at the milieu, and that became very helpful in me thinking my writing, and actually was the basis of the fourth chapter of my dissertation, is that I had been socialized politically in Cairo. Although I was from Alexandria, I went to Cairo University when I was 17. It was in the midst of the Kifaya movement. A lot of my experience to politics was there when I was at the Sedej in 07, 2007, 2008. I was in Cairo. When I started being introduced to activist circles and kind of learning about all that was in Cairo. So I had a pretty... I thought I had a pretty good understanding of, you know, who hated who and you know, who didn't speak to who and all of that. It seemed very clear to me. And that, you know, if you were a revolutionary socialist, if you were a Trotskyist, you did not talk to the liberals who were with Mohamed Baradei and so on. It was kind of a very, it made sense, you know. And I remember that, I think, at a meeting with her and we were walking back. And it was very interesting for me to... just try to kind of have that connection by criticizing others and you know, building rapport and building rapport from that point of view, and was baffled to see that she had a very different perspective on things, and you know, consider that although she had, you know, doctrinal or ideological differences with a lot of these people, what counted more importantly was the fact that they were street comrades or street, you know, that they had been in the streets together at a point in Egyptian history where very few people protested. So people got arrested together, people got beaten up together, and people had connections in Alexandria that kind of superseded or were more important than the connection that they had to their mother organizations in Cairo. And this kind of oriented my point of view, my gaze to the fact that, oh, maybe also I should understand, not, you know, come with that idea that, you know, ideology determines how people, like political organizations and so on, but to see actually what are the actual relationships between those people and how it came about and what was the origin, which was the death of young Khalid Said in 2010, that kind of created a moment in Alexandria where movements organized together, which is something I wrote about in the book also. And I got really interested, and this was also kind of a, you know, a reminder that I should be very attuned to what people tell me and not just arrive, which is the danger usually when, you know, you come to a place and you spend 2, 3, 4 weeks and do your research and you already have your questions in your mind and you kind of go look for the answers that work for you. And it's very different if you're spending a bit more time and kind of let yourself be surprised by people you're talking to. So yeah, that was I know that from that point on, also, I started to approach my research very differently, thanks to kind of the insights I had gotten from talking to people and just not, you know, have my also political analysis of the situation dictate how I should, you know, understand the situation, which is also always a good thing to do when you're doing research on the region, but in any place, actually. So
I have a weird question. Well, not weird, but one of my questions is like, is research on activism and activism in itself, or should the boundaries be clearly set?
No, so it's not a weird question. I think it's an important question. So I think there is. I remain someone who is quite attached to. Let's like put a bad word, but to the scientificity of science. For me, it is important to. It is important to know why one does research, what are the political implications of the research. So both how we got to a topic and why are we doing it and what it might do to people that we, you know, work with and so on. This is very important. But for me, the production of knowledge is something that needs to be kind of disassociated at some point from the politics of it. And I know that a lot of people might not agree with that, but I feel that the greatest political potential of knowledge is when it is done in a certain way and, you know, with respecting certain rules and so on. This is a belief I hold dear, and when I try to write about something, so kind of being away helps. When I'm in the field work, it's very complicated to do that, obviously, for obvious reasons. But when I write, I try to, you know, really think about the conditions of productions of the knowledge I'm writing. How did I come to write it? To try to, you know, have methods of guaranteeing the data I collect. I'd also discuss it with the people that I write with or that I talk to. It's important for me to kind of disassociate the two. That does not mean, obviously, I'm not saying that, you know, that production of knowledge is objective or that it's, you know, free of all politics. Of course, it's not that, but it's just that, for instance, in a research, by explaining clearly, very clearly what you did, what you did not do, what your position was, how you talked to people, why you talked to those people, who didn't want to talk to you, and so on, and always explain to the limits of your research. I'm teaching the methodology this year to students. So these are things that I always kind of want to take the time to. It's always explain what you did, how you did it, and what you couldn't do. What are the limits of your research? This is usually the condition to produce knowledge that is has a certain degree of accuracy and fidelity to the field. This is what's important to me, is that for me the best thing is if someone who this is how I see social sciences. If I read something in social sciences, I feel that I need to learn something either on the people or the places I am reading about, or I need to learn something about myself. I need to question how I came to be, for instance, why I do things in a certain way. And this is, for me, good social sciences. If I read it and I think, oh, I have always done this in that way, and this explains partly why I do that. So this is the accuracy, is trying to kind of have that fidelity to explain how people feel, what they do, and that if they read it, it does not seem completely, they're not completely estranged by what they're reading. And if sometimes they feel that, you know, things are harsh to be, things that they're reading are harsh, or, you know, are feel like that the harshness is not unfair, in a sense, that if they're reading something, they say, okay, I can see how this analysis came about, and it seems as a fair analysis of the event. But it's true that studying activism kind of muddies the waters a bit, and this is also partly why I'm like not looking at activism anymore as a topic of research, because there is also kind of an, I'd say, an easiness to go to, you know, studying groups of people that you mostly agree with and that are, you know, sociologically similar to you and so on. And maybe we need more focus on studying the state or institutions or, you know, other social groups. So yeah, I'm kind of moving away a bit from that now. But yeah, there is this complication and I need it. It just needs to be addressed. This is always my point of view. It's like, you know, it's like a lot of topic linked to possessionality. It's not a good thing in and of itself, but it needs to be addressed. It's not by pretending that it doesn't exist and saying, you know, this is objective science. I'm just, you know, doing science. It doesn't work like that. So just, yeah, the addressing is very important.
Okay, so my last question is on L'Esprit de la Révolte, which is a great catalog, I would say, of Arab Spring symbols and semiotics, from songs to slogans and jokes. And you did it with the team on with Leila Dakhli and the ERC Dream Team. Team. That's that was not on purpose.
It's how we call ourselves. So, you know.
Could you tell us more about the collective process of picking the items and actually, well, turning them into archives?
Yeah, so I am part of a European Research Council funded project that is called, so the acronym is DREAM, is Drafting and Enacting Revolutions in the Arab Mediterranean, that is headed by social historian Leila Dakhli. And we're a big group of people working together on that project. Some of us are working on the more contemporary aspects of, you know, contention and protest and so on, so like from the 90s to today. Others are working on earlier. So the project basically covers from the 50s to today and covers the countries of, you know, the Arab Mediterranean. So basically eight countries that are on the Mediterranean. And yeah, with very different topics. So the idea is at some point we had that you know, wish to, obviously tons of books have been written on the Arab uprisings and the Arab revolutions and so on. And we wanted to produce something that was, first of all, accessible and readable by large, you know, different types of people and not just for academia. And also we really wanted to render visible the variety and the diversity of what these events had produced in the different countries, and not just kind of the most visible aspects of them or the more most visibly political aspects of them. So this is how it kind of started. The very interesting part of it, at least for me, was that it was a truly collective endeavor, which is, kind of rare in academia, and because of how the academic world is, you know, organized, it really kind of puts forward individual genius and individual, you know, production and so on. And here, if you look at the book does not have the writings don't have authors, single authors, or any names on them. So it was actually in Tunis that we did the first kind of brainstorm in the National Archives or in the Bibliothèque Nationale. I don't remember it now, but it was in 2 years ago. We kind of had all the groups sit and trying to brainstorm what were the things that we, from our different experiences writing about these topics, doing field work in you know, Tunisia, Morocco, Egypt, Algeria, different places, what were the things that we wanted to relay? What were the things that we wanted people to know about? What were the things that we wanted to focus on and kind of underline the, you know, creativity of people, of ordinary people in those times of great upheavals. So this was kind of the starting point. And then just look, we had tons of ideas. It was the writing process was interesting in that sense. It's just like tons and tons and tons of ideas, and then starting to kind of choose between them what were the things that for us represented that creativity and kind of as archives, as you mentioned, but also this is why it says, you know, archive et actualité, you know, so archives, but also trying to not, because in the act of archiving, there's also kind of an act of death in a sense, as you know, of something that is in the past. And we really wanted to use those as symbols and as, you know, moments that showed how these things emerged at some, a certain point. Some of them were still going on. And also this is why it was important for us to have also Algeria, have Lebanon, have Sudan being part of that project, to see those different waves of, and not just, you know, have that kind of 10 years after what happened in Tunisia or in Egypt and so on. So it really came from that. And it was, we wrote it, we are 10 authors, if I'm not mistaken. We wrote together the first parts in Tunis and then in the south of France, kind of all together and as a collective, met for like a whole week just before COVID and kind of wrote together, which was a really nice thing to do.
Thank you very much, Youssef, for talking to us.
Thank you for having me. It was very nice to chat.
The Arab Reform Initiative Podcast. Podcast مبادرة الإصلاح العربي.